week's lesson.
But a silly song that a lot of us here, I think, learned in childhood. I don't know the exact title of the song, but it goes something like this. Nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms. How many of you remember learning that silly song when you were little kids? We knew it was funny as children, didn't we? We knew that song was supposed to be funny. But the really funny thing is, as we grew a little bit older, and not that much older, starting really at adolescence, though the song was still as silly, we started experiencing that feeling in kind of a serious way. I think a lot of us can not only remember that song, but we can remember even more vividly episodes in our life, maybe whole chapters of our lives, when that song seemed like it could be our theme song. When we really did feel like nobody liked us and everybody hated us, and we might as well throw in the towel and give up. We might as well crawl under a rock. We wish we could just disappear. We might as well eat worms, or maybe become worm food ourselves. Well, last week we explored some of the findings of contemporary psychology and psychiatry. We talked about some of the evidence that secular psychologists are coming up with, that whether these secular psychologists would like to think of it this way or not, validates what Jesus taught in episode after episode in the Gospels, that truly it is done unto us as we believe, and to a greater extent than we ever believed. The outcome of any experience isn't determined by our circumstance, by what happened to us or was said about us, but rather it is determined by how we feel, how what happened seemed to make us feel, and how we feel, that's not determined by what actually happened, although that may be how it appears to be, but rather by what we believe happened, by how the beliefs we've been accumulating and collecting throughout our lifetime interpret the event, what was said or done. And any belief that makes you feel like nobody likes me and everybody hates me and I might as well go to the bait shop for dinner is a belief you need to get rid of. Is a belief that is neither psychologically healthy, materially helpful, or most important, spiritually valid. I mean, it goes without saying that, psychologically speaking, any mental state, any set of beliefs about ourselves that makes us feel depressed, despondent, pessimistic about life, and potentially even suicidal, wanting to eat worms, which cannot be good for you. Any psychological state that would make you feel any of those ways is a sign of mental illness, not mental health. And from a material standpoint, I think it also goes without saying that any person with that kind of attitude is probably going to fail. Is probably going to fail in school, socially, at relationships, at life in general. And it should go without saying. That the same is true spiritually. Although in this case, the waters have been muddied a little bit by religious traditions that seem to almost encourage those kind of feelings. Encourage guilt, remorse, shame, condemnation. Really kind of eat some worms mental states. Really kind of, well, not feel good mental states. Let's put it that way. But as I pointed out last week, and as our daily word points out, Jesus said the truth. If these beliefs are based on truth, they should make us free. That's the message of Moses in the Old Testament too. Let my people go. John taught us that God is love. Paul, that love is the greatest thing there is and the fulfillment of all law. And both Old Testament and New teach us that the great commandment is to love the Lord and to love each other, to love our neighbors as and as well as ourselves. So any belief based on spiritual truth should fill us with hope, should inspire faith, should inspire a feeling that God loves us and that we are forgiven, and that everybody should love one another, and nobody should hate anybody, and we shall overcome. That's what any belief that is spiritually valid should teach us. But what do we do with those other beliefs? What do we do when we get that feeling? The feeling that theme song goes with, that silly feeling that doesn't feel silly at all, that everybody hates me and nobody likes me. What do we do when we get that feeling? Well, what if somebody else said that to you? How would you feel then? What would you do then? What if your worst enemy said that? What if your greatest rival, our biggest competitor said that, said, you know, nobody likes you. Everybody hates you. You might as well just give up and concede to me. Would you take it lying down? Would you say, okay, I guess you're right, I might as well give up? Or would you get mad? Would you say something brilliant like, am not? Would you at least think, if not say it loud? Or maybe as you think about it, you know, you always think about the great things you should have said afterwards. Well, next time. When you, at the very minimum, think, I'm not the one nobody likes. It's you. I'm not the one everybody hates. You're the one. And wouldn't it steal your determination? Wouldn't it fill you with indignation? Wouldn't it double your resolve to rub the other guy's face in the dirt and make him eat some worms? Isn't that what it would do? Isn't that how it would make you feel? Well, if that's how we'd feel if someone else did it, maybe we should apply the same standard to our own beliefs. To those beliefs specifically that make us our own worst enemy. Why should we let those beliefs go unchallenged? Or what if you're walking down the street, you're walking past a tavern, and outside the tavern, leaning against the lamppost, there is somebody just drunk out of their minds, total stranger, reeling with liquor, singing that song, everybody hates you, nobody likes you, why don't you go eat some worms? Would you immediately take it personally? Would you think, he's talking about me, and he must know something? After all, he looks so intelligent hanging on that lamppost so he doesn't fall down. Would that be your thought? Or would your first thought be, this guy doesn't know me. This guy's just stoned out of his mind. He's just babbling. Why should I take this seriously? It's the drink talking. And even if a loved one has had a little too much to drink or is maybe a little too upset, even if somebody we actually know says something unkind when they are in that state, when they're in a stupor, hopefully we would be wise enough to understand that it's the drink talking, it's the upset talking. Hopefully we'd be wise enough to understand it's not just us. We aren't the only ones who, when we're upset, say things we don't really mean and regret saying. We're not the only ones, when we're drunk, who do stupid things that we wish we hadn't done. Pretty much that's universal. Hopefully we'd be wise enough to understand that. So if we see someone else in that mental state, we would recognize it's the upset talking, it's the booze talking. We wouldn't decide that guy leaning against a lamppost should be our designated driver, would we? We wouldn't, if we were out with a crowd, decide, well, no, I'm not going to let the one among us who doesn't drink, who's sober, I'm not going to let him drive. I'm going to pick the drunkest one in the crowd to drive, would we? So why do we pick these emotions and the beliefs that project them? Why do we decide they are indisputable, an indisputable and reliable source of information? It seems crazy. We need to quit giving the keys to our heart, to our feelings, to those beliefs, just as we wouldn't give the keys to our car to the drunk. We need to get in the driver's seat, and that's really our first lesson in disputing our beliefs. Last week I said, when we've got a belief that's getting us in trouble, we need to dispute it. Well, the first lesson is, if someone else said it to you, would you take it seriously? Well then, why should you take it seriously if you are being your own worst enemy? You should treat it the same way. You should stand up to it. You should, in other words, use the tools you've been developing your whole life and put up an argument. Because haven't we our whole lives been learning to stand up for ourselves? Haven't we our whole lives been learning to say brilliant things like, oh yeah, and emerge from challenges determined? That's our first lesson. We need to apply that same standard to our conversations to ourselves about ourselves, to the beliefs that make us feel bad because the way we feel is the result of a belief. We need to, in other words, distance ourselves, separate ourselves from the belief, and distance ourselves in another way, too. Look at it logically. You know, the one thing that the kind of beliefs that make us feel like nobody likes us and everybody hates us have in common? They are all distortions and exaggerations. They all have this in common. They have these three things in common. They take things to be permanent, pervasive, and personal that are none of the above. They take things to be permanent, pervasive, and personal that are none of the above. And the reason why this is important is if we take criticism, if we take failure, if we take a belief that makes us feel like we're worthless, if we take that as though it is pervasive, it's universal, it's everywhere, permanent, it's never going to end, and personal, it's me, I'm the one at fault here, then there's nothing you can do about that. You're trapped. But you know, is it really that way? Look at it rationally. Is it true that nobody likes me? are just this one person. That everybody hates me are just this one. And is it even true that they all never have liked me and always have hated me? Maybe, in which case their opinion doesn't have much validity, does it? Because if they're just somebody that, it's just another pervasiveness thing. We get this idea, and I think Unity people are worse than many in this. We get this idea that, well, everybody's supposed to like us. That is crazy. I mean, you talk about an irrational belief. Everybody doesn't like anybody. There are people in this world that are just not going to like your face. It's just that while we're all part of a common human family, there are people in my physical family I don't even like that much. There were years in childhood when my sister and I could hardly even be in the same room. I mean, somebody was telling me about how their kids are driving back to Texas, all vacations with my sister in the back seat. I now understand were such a treat for mom and dad. You know, we were kind of like oil and water. And there are some people that are, we just, in life's puzzle, we are not two pieces that fit together. That doesn't mean we don't all fit in the puzzle. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with us or that other person. It just means we are oil and water. There's somebody else with whom you are biscuits and gravy. Find your biscuits and gravy person. Or find your beef stew and soda bread person, because that's waiting for you right downstairs. You find the person with whom you fit together. And the others, well, who do you think you are that everybody's supposed to like you? Everybody didn't like Marilyn Monroe. Now, in my youth, I could not imagine that. She seemed like a really special person to me. to almost everybody I knew, but I'm sure there were some people, especially female people, that didn't like her as much as I did. Well, tough. So, you know, if you let that go, if it's somebody that doesn't like you, you know they're gonna, whatever you do, they're not gonna like you. There's not gonna be any pleasing them. We've all known people like that that we're just oil and water with it. There was no pleasing them. So they don't even count. I mean, they don't even count. And the others, is it true that they never liked me or just this one time in this one circumstance? Or to apply it to other things, is it true that you always fail every time or you just failed this time? If you take it out of this broad, pervasive field and put it down to specifics, you can handle it. Because, you know, if they only didn't like you this time, if you only failed this time, there's going to be another time. And it's possible you could do better next time. But if you think of it as though it's for all time, well, then you might as well eat worms. Might as well eat worms. If you think, well, I ate a cookie, and that means I have blown my diet, it's all over, I'm just a glutton, I am destined to be fat, and there's nothing can be done about it. That is exactly what's going to happen. But if you decide, I shouldn't have eaten that cookie, you might not next time. And even if you eat one next time, you might not the third time. You'll make progress. You know, with cookies, I find it's one day at a time. as with many things. But you see what I mean? Talk yourself back into reality. That's the second thing. These beliefs only work in the dark. If you look at them rationally, if you shine a light on them, the irrational nature of these beliefs generally becomes obvious. So weigh the evidence. What is the actual evidence for me to believe nobody likes me? That I'm always going to be a failure? That I'll never succeed at that? What is the actual evidence? Or is there any alternative explanation. Maybe I feel like one person this one time, to bring it into reality, really doesn't like me. Maybe I feel like somebody that I used to think of as a friend is acting like they hate me, at least this one time. Is there an alternative explanation? You know, a pessimist always thinks there's just one possible explanation, and trust me, they will pick the very worst one possible, for whatever it is. But a rational person will look at the interchange when the person seems to act like, how come they don't like me this time? Well, a rational person will look at it and think, well, you know, there could be other explanations. There is almost no experience in life for which there is only one possible explanation. Almost invariably, there are many possible explanations for what happens. So let's look at some other possible explanations. Why do I think this person doesn't like me anymore? They don't like me anymore. Well, they usually have time for me, but they just wanted to get off the phone as soon as they could. They're usually patient with me, and they were kind of short. They're usually friendly, and they seemed almost hostile, certainly kind of unfriendly and stiff. Well, it could be that they just don't like you anymore, but it's also quite possible if you quit being so hypersensitive yourself and so busy decorating for your pity party. You know, that has a theme song, too. It's my party, and I'll cry if I want to. It could be, as an alternative, that we're the ones that have been insensitive. We've got this friend who usually likes us, and something's bothering them. This person's never sharp with me, and this time they don't want to talk. Did it occur to me, maybe if I was a friend, I should have said, is something wrong, dear? Is there something I could do? Maybe I'm the one who is insensitive. Isn't that an alternative? That's something I can change. So look at all the alternatives. Look at all the possible alternatives. And also, think of all the possible implications. Maybe this is supposed to be a learning experience. Is it true, even this one time, that nobody likes me? That everybody hates me? Could it be that nobody likes it when I do a certain thing? Everybody hates it when I behave a certain way. When I maybe have too much to drink. Maybe there's something I can learn from this. Maybe there's something I can learn. If I think it's me they hate, why, there's nothing you do about that. I'm just a loser. If it's what I'm doing or saying that they hate, maybe I need to change. Maybe I need to get some help. Maybe I need to find a support group. Maybe it's not me, maybe it's what I'm doing. To dispute our erroneous beliefs, mostly all it really takes is common sense. And most especially the common sense to recognize that anything that sings, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms, is silly. Jesus said, unless you become as a little child, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, you know, as a little child, I knew that was a silly song, didn't you? Didn't you laugh when you sang it? Didn't you think it was funny? As a little child, did you ever think, oh, this must be true? No, not once. To overcome our bad habits of belief, all we need to do is understand that that song is just as silly as it was when we were six. And anything that makes us sing it is just make us, we're just being silly. And that's the way to start to talk ourselves out of beliefs that are unworthy of who we are as God's children. Because you know what? As far as God is concerned, you are the most lovable thing there is. God loves each one of you as though you were his only child. God thinks you are just great. And we need to start thinking of that about each other. Let's pray about this. And to center ourselves for our experience of God in prayer, let's know God is real. God is love. God is here. And God is the only power at work in our lives.